Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 703 of Long Box Heroes, the Lamborghini of comic book podcasts. Joe and Todd here. Todd, hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. Only 297 more shows till I retire.
Well, I did. October 96 just came in the mail today.
The one you're looking for is still out there, though. So
yeah, March 96 is still, yeah.
Don't give it away. People will be bidding on it and then trying to, if one pops up, and holding it for ransom, Joe.
That's all right. There's already one guy who's holding it for ransom. Mm-hmm. We'll deal with it. But you're at least until then. And I was peeking at 97. 97 looks like it'll be pretty easy. So
stop it. Stop peeking. Stop peeking. And if you do peek, don't let me know. 96 is all we have. If you buy them, do it on the DL.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
Don't let me know until I'm done scanning 96 and go, oh, by the way, let me crush your dreams that you're done.
I told you, you have to show me the trick. You have to get me the special clamp, all the tricks that you teach me to scan like you do.
I'm a master. It's just, I've been doing this now how many years, Joe?
If only you had watched Seinfeld, right?
Right.
You could have been like, oh, Joe, I can't do that. That'd be like going to Pavarotti and saying, teach me to sing like you, you know?
Uh-huh.
I can't do it.
Okay. I can't do it, Joe.
All right. But the one thing that Todd can't do that I could do barely, and again, I want to address this up front, and I wanted to mention on After Dark, but I didn't. Because I really wanted to swear about it, but I messed up the show last week.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I put the drops, like we dropped the different things in for like Becky's Walk Down Lois Lane and the Rob Watch and stuff. And I flip flopped the order of those sort of things.
And you were so happy afterwards. Oh,
I was so upset with myself. And like I said, this is the clean show. So again, I have a big smile on my face as I'm saying all this, right? So I don't say anything. But I'm, again, it's not the first time that something like this has happened, but it's the first time in a long time that something like this has happened. Mm-hmm. I really feel bad about it. You know, that people had to like go re-download the show. And thanks to J-Pop in the Discord and on social media for pointing it out to me.
And people in text chats.
Yeah. Well, the first person who mentions it gets the acknowledgement. The other people,
the 31st person that mentioned it gets the fire. Yeah. But I will say this: when it was brought to my attention that that it ends up burying a certain person who does a bit on this show, I was crying. Yeah. I was crying. So, but you know, next time you won't listen to the NFL trades and you'll concentrate on what you're doing.
I was really interested to hear about the NFL trades.
Wow, I could feel the excitement.
No, but what I am interested to talk about is what we have on tap for this week. We have good news and bad news in regards to one of the greatest comics that Image has put out in the last 10 years. Maybe more. We have a follow-up and a news story in regards to the advent of AI art being used in comic books and other comic mediums.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Rob Watch officially, you know, a mystery that some 20 years old has been solved, which I didn't think was a mystery, but apparently it was. Conventions, the aforementioned Walk Down Lois Lane with Becky, discussing when is a reverse flash not a reverse flash, I guess. Not to tip the hand too much. What we read this past week, which is Nightwing 112 and Cobra Commander number 3. What we're looking forward to coming out this week. Also, Todd and Joe have issues, as we are going to be discussing issue 6, the end of the first official miniseries of the Gail Simone Secret 6. And maybe like some flashback TV talk to wrap things up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't tell you that ahead of time.
No, I like when you surprise me.
Yeah, you like surprises. Nobody likes surprises more than Todd.
That's right. Does not throw me off my game ever.
Absolutely. Now, Image recently announced that this fall, they, much like DC, are going to be getting into the young adult book market, which apparently is a big thing these days. And they are going to be doing a smaller format, young adult friendly, whatever, version of Saga.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is great. More people read Saga, the better.
Yes.
But the fact that Image is soliciting this to come out in September, I don't think we're going to be seeing any new... Hopefully that means we will be seeing a new issue of Saga come September.
Yes, because what's September? It'd be May, June, July, August, September.
Right.
So yeah, so like if you were going to be doing like the end of a 5 or 6 issue run, Saga would be back already, if that makes any sense.
Correct. So
I'm with you. I'm with you. I think they'll be announcing Saga maybe even a month earlier, but yeah, it won't be until near September.
Again, it's the, you know, we've talked about it so many times, you know, going all the way back to Walking Dead and Image doing that publishing push where Walking Dead ends up being a surprise hit. They have the price to move trade of the first 6 issues in stores when issue 7 comes out. And then that essentially for a very long period of time, like I would say almost like 10 plus years, that becomes Image's go-to for all of their series is.
Yep.
And, you know, obviously they've recently gone away with it. You know, they finally said like, okay, we can stop charging $9 for the first trade of Walking Dead. It's kind of sort of paid for itself. People are buying it regardless. We can put it back up to $15 and people are still going to buy it, you know?
Yeah, it's a book that's over. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not like you're going to be even at the end, didn't they? Like you were saying, they, you know, towards the end, they jacked it up a little bit, but there's no point in now. The only thing, and this is all great for young readers, I'm all for it. I just, some of those opening splash pages, Joe, you know,
so put a mature reader label on the front.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, you know, this is the first trade. Things don't get really crazy with those opening splash pages mm-hmm. until like around like issue like 25 to 30.
Right.
Like the first 6, the first 12, the first 18, you're okay.
Yep. And I mean, this is great because it's a cheaper, you know, price point, blah, blah, blah. But for me, like 6x9 would drive me nuts.
Yeah.
But I get like, hey, this is a try this. You know what I mean? Like, and that's the way to get them in. Like some of this DC's doing some of the smaller aspects of the books. But like it kind of drives me nuts a little bit because there's something that I wanted to give Brett to read. I wanted to give him Concrete, and I only have Concrete in certain ways. One way, which is a big, thick, amazing trade paperback, but it has a Paul Chadwick sketch in it. So it's not leaving my house. And then I have the digest sizes, and Chadwick's art is so beautiful that you lose all the detail in the digest sizes. But, you know, it's the only way that they have traded them in the last 10 years. I don't even know if their new ones are available, but I was always like, oh, the little ones, but it's a stepping stone for people. And I get it.
Yep. I will probably buy this. Keep it on my person. I don't get out much in the first place, but just in case I do and comics or whatever comes up, like I used to do with Walking Dead, I would hand it, like we'd talk about comics and Walking Dead would come up and I would just give them, I'd have the trade on me. I'd give it to someone and they're like, when do you want this back? I'm like, it's yours. Read it. I'll just go buy another one. It's $9. Right.
Yeah. But maybe if they do digest size Sandmans, I'll start doing that.
There you go. Oh,
Sandman, that was mine. That was in the car.
Yeah.
That Preludes and Nocturnes is like, what do you got? Here you go.
Well, I also remember Preacher was in there for you too for a while.
Yes. Yeah. Preacher was. But Preacher was one I had to feel the room out before I gave it to them.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like, but most of the people that I hang around with have a very like open-mindedness. So it was like, okay, you might not like it, but you're not going to attack me for giving it to you.
Right. So just as a follow-up to a story from last week in regards to that issue of Batman that had the Andrea Sorrentino art in it, and there was the creator online, James Leach, who was making accusations that Andrea Sorrentino was using AI to do the art or AI assisted, right?
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, Andrea Sorrentino on their Instagram put up video of their process of how they did the art. Now, granted, it was how they did some of the art, not all of the art.
Mm-hmm.
And then it had come up that some of the recent covers that another DC artist, and again, I'm going to butcher their name, and I do apologize, Xingzhong Zhou, had put up specifically in regarding variant covers for Wonder Woman and Power Girl, you know, kind of attempting to point out that these were done because of line art being inconsistent and so on and so forth. So then Zhou put up their sketch and their process and their inking and their coloring process and everything else up on social media as well.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody else pointed out that DC is doing a hardcover, which is a celebration of their cinematic universes. And a lot of the pictures that are on the cover of the book, you know, look very AI generated. Like they have Christopher Reeve Superman, but in the Man of Steel suit.
Right.
And things of that nature. Now, there are sites where you could check AI probability on art,
mm-hmm.
but that's also inconsistent as well. The one thing that we have to hang our hat on is that DC has come out issuing a statement saying, and I'm just looking, I want to get the exact wording of the statement from DC. Okay, so DC has a longstanding policy in place that all artwork must be the artist's original work. We are looking into the specifics of this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you could do, right?
Yeah, that's all.
Especially when the artists come out and show their process with Sorrentino and Joe.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we've hit the point now. Like, you know, now I'm leaning towards, you know, benefit of the doubt. They showed their processes, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like we're in witch hunt territory with AI art now. And I get it. Nobody wants AI to, like, be robbing other people's arts because that's kind of what it does. But man, oh man, I think we've only hit the tip of the iceberg on all of this.
Yes. That
there's going to be a lot of accusations being flung around. Some rightfully so, some not. So I don't know. It's like a case-by-case basis for me, you know?
Now, on the same token of that, there is an online artist by the name of Luis Ruiz. His handle on social media is Robot9000.
Mm-hmm.
He is a admitted AI art user, right?
Mm-hmm.
He regularly puts up stories and arts and so on and so forth, you know, specifically saying like, well, I did it with this program, or I did this with Photoshop, or I did this with Midjourney, or whatever it is, right?
Right.
Admitted, this is AI art. This is what I do. He recently entered and won a Spawn art contest, submitting AI art that he has had up on his social media, very clearly stating that it's AI art, and saying like, oh, this is me taking Ashley Wood's art and, you know, running it through the AI filters, right? And mm-hmm. he submitted it and he won. Now, in the official rules for the contest, it says that AI art-generated submissions will not be accepted at this time. So I don't know what's going on.
I don't know either, Joe. This is above my pay grade.
Right.
What I get paid for this show, man.
You get paid handsomely, I'd say.
Yes, very handsomely. But even that is still higher than my pay grade.
Yeah. It's just that it's going to... It's going to get worse before it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel as though, as a comic book show that talks about the news that's going on and art, you know, the actual drawn art is a part of the comics that we talk about here. We got to talk about this as it comes up, you know?
I'll say this. The only thing that I'll disagree with you on is that I don't think it's going to get worse before it gets better. I think it's just going to get worse.
Okay.
Because I have a weird feeling we're in radar detector territory. That it's going to be like, okay, here's the AI art, and we have this ability to, like, have the probability meter. But then the AI art's going to get better, and it's going to be better than the detector. And then they're going to up the detector, but the AI art gets better. And it's like we're going to be in this perpetual motion of just trying to catch up to weed out AI art. I think that's our future from here on out.
So, at least with DC coming out and issuing a statement,
mm-hmm.
we have to take DC as a company at their word that they're not going to do this, right?
Right. And if anybody gives it to us, we didn't know. Because we've made a statement.
Or, like, we've made a statement and said that we do not, like, any art that we get from our artists has to be original art by them.
Mm-hmm.
And there has to be, I feel as though with DC saying that, and again, Marvel hasn't issued any sort of statements or any other publisher or anything like that. But by DC saying that, I'm not going to say that it's absolving them from any wrongdoing, but it's at least them saying, we're looking into it.
Yeah, we're trying.
We're going to do what we can.
Right.
But unless we have, like, a literal smoking gun or catch an artist doing this, when the artists that you guys are naming are putting their actual physical pen-to-paper process up online, what could we do?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. And I will say this last thing is I was, if I knew how to do it, this whole segment would have, I would have AI'd our voices and done the whole segment, but that's beyond me. So
if I had, well, again, listen, I'm bringing up wrestling this time and you'll love it.
Mm-hmm.
If I had those, AI voice capabilities, I would have had a certain someone, from this past Monday night. Instead of saying the podcast that he does listen to, it'd be him endorsing this podcast.
Oh, fantastic. Is it Bird Bones?
It is.
Okay.
Ask not for whom the Rob trolls. The Rob trolls for thee. And now, the Rob Watch.
Well, someone who we do have a kind of sort of endorsement of our podcast, thanks to the listener who sent in the iTunes review for the Rob's podcast. So the Rob was in the news this week. We'll talk about the stuff that made the news wire, not the, you know, whatnot stuff, you know?
Right.
So Tom Brevoort has a Substack newsletter thing, right?
Right.
And, you know, I guess there was some controversy recently that there's an upcoming collection of Cable Deadpool series that with the collection is being renamed as Deadpool Cable.
Sure.
People were upset about it. Right. People are upset about it. Who cares? Right. But in discussing that, Brevoort said that a couple years before that series was printed, in a misguided and unsuccessful attempt to avoid paying creator incentives to the Rob, with whom he'd have some bitter encounter, Bill Gemmis had decided to relaunch and rebrand three series that the Rob had creator participation in. Cable, X-Force, and Deadpool became Soldier X, Ecstatic, and Agent X. Mm-hmm. All three of them were suffering from failing sales and were ultimately discontinued anyway. So, with that being said, this is something that had been the discussion for many, many years, and it had been proven to be wrong, even by the Rob himself.
Right.
But with Brevoort coming right out and saying this at this point, that yes, this happened, wouldn't you know, it put a nickel in the Rob.
Shocked.
So, you know, obviously when this had initially come up, and this would have been like early, like it's been like 2005 where this rumor started, right?
Mm-hmm.
They got a quote from the Rob at that time, where he says, and again, just to go over the Rob's quote from that time, was So the idea was that they would kill the books in order to save on royalty payments to people like myself is simply unfounded. It would be much more devious if the books were selling exceptionally well and Marvel renamed them in order to keep the riches for themselves. But in the case of those titles, there were no riches to keep as they were barely posting profits at all. And again, comics were different at the time. That those books were selling like in the neighborhood of 40,000 copies a month, where like the high end stuff was like 100,000 plus.
Yeah.
So it then comes out that they did in fact do that, even though the Rob is like, there's no way they would do that. So then the Rob issues this statement today.
Right.
At last, after all these years, they say it out loud. Sad. Imagine introducing Cable, Deadpool, Domino, X-Force, Shatterstar, Strife, etc. Make no doubt whatsoever that these characters never make it to the page absent my hyperactive imagination. I had sold millions of copies for Marvel, and then to learn from a first-hand inside account that they were attempting to maneuver me out of my deals. Hashtag Deadpool, hashtag Cable, hashtag Domino, hashtag X-Force, hashtag The Rob.
Hashtag Spectrox.
I think I cut that one off.
Okay.
But the crazy thing about this is I tried to do my research to see what perceived slight there was between The Rob and Bill Gemmis, and I couldn't find anything, but I do find that it was the renaming of these books and it not changing the sales, Bill Gemmis going to the Rob and getting the Rob to come on and do covers for the Cable Deadpool book that comes out in 2004, which is them scrapping the Agent X and Soldier X names. They keep Ecstatics, and that's kind of like going on to this day still as like a Mike Allred, Peter Milligan brand. They even kind of poked fun at that, this whole rumor and innuendo in pages of that book with a very flattering drawing of the Rob by Mike Allred.
Right.
So it's just that I thought like even like in 2005 when they came out and they said like, nah, this isn't true. I kind of always believed that it was true, even though like they came to my face and said, no, it's not. I'm like, no, this is very clearly true. They very clearly, even if it wasn't to cut the Rob out of royalties, it was very clearly to spite the Rob.
So I'll say this. I don't know if it's true because next time you'll be telling me that they stopped producing Fantastic Four comics because they didn't have the movie rights, Joe. And boy, oh boy, I never believed that rumor. Wink, microphone. Second of all, are you saying that the one time the Rob was hard to work with, Marvel got mad at him? That would be the one time. Oh, yeah. My God. I've had my ear to like the, you know, the ground with comic news my entire life and we've been doing this. I never heard this rumor, Joe.
Really?
Never heard this rumor. If you had told me, like, if before this dropped and Tom Brevoort did this, I'd be like, I don't remember. I vaguely remember them changing the names of the books because I remember around the time, this time I think the definitive Colonel Sanders artist was doing a Cable book, maybe, and then they changed the title. So, like, I kind of remember it all, but they do wacky stuff all the time, but I never heard them changing it to get one over on the Rob. Saying all this, I 100% believe it's true because you don't make these changes for no reason whatsoever. And I still to this day believe the Fantastic Four comic rumors, you know?
So, you know, back in the day, you know, we were talking the waning days of the internet, as it were, back before CBR changed what their site is. There was a post that would go up every week, and it was called Comic Book Urban Legends Revealed by Brian Cronin. And every week he would take three different... Right. And he would investigate those. And a lot of those got published into books and stuff like that. And I definitely recommend checking all of those out, because they are all very good books. But all of his articles and stuff are archived online. You could certainly check them out. And again, that was like my comic news stuff for the longest time.
Right. I mean, I've read a lot of those, but I don't even remember that one, the Rob one. So
yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah. And again, it's just funny of like, you know, obviously it's a different time. It's a different place in regards to the way that news kind of gets disseminated to people in 2024 versus 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wonder if what it would have been like back then to win something on a Rob's. Why not? That's all.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. Why not? More like, why would you?
There you go.
Thank you. So, hey, there's conventions this weekend. And this is actually kind of like the one of the B-show big ones, I guess you would say. Right. As this weekend out in Anaheim, California is WonderCon.
Yep. Those are the guys who do San Diego. So
yep. This is like little San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's media guests and stuff like that. But, you know, I always like to focus on the creators, and especially creators that don't pop up as much as others. And I always like to shine a light on that to let folks know, West Coast people, you know, there's a chance to see Colleen Doran, who I don't think gets out very much. Mm-hmm. Steve Englehart, Tony Isabella, whose name I never see pop up anywhere. Terry Cavanaugh, David Mack, Todd Knock, who's coming actually over and doing like Amazing Spider-Man here soon. And that should be beautiful. And Gail Simone, who's got big projects to promote this this summer, right?
Yes, she does.
So she's going to be on the convention circuit. She's West Coast based. She has been very active lately, obviously, because she has the new X-Men book. But also, you know, she's very big at promoting as many of the stores in the greater West Coast, Pacific Northwest area as possible. So definitely, you know, if you're on the West Coast, go check that con out. Go tell Gail Simone. She's awesome. That's all.
I agree.
So the links to WonderCon stuff will be in the show notes, along with information about the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. Anytime any of the shows go live, of course, you can find them at their own individual sites through whatever podcatcher that you choose to use, or you could just go to soon-to-be-named-network.com and get them all there. And that includes this show, of course, Longbox Heroes After Dark, Final Wrestling Place, At Odds with Wrestling, We Need Wrestling, Puzzle Warriors 3, Profane Arguments, Wings on Wings, Porch Talk should be coming back soon, maybe.
This isn't After Dark, so the weather's changing, Joe.
Oh, we're not supposed to talk about it on podcasts, period.
Oh, but okay.
There you go. I do have sad news that I don't think Hayabusa is ever coming back.
Oh, no, this is my my sad voice, Joe.
I may have to reach out to someone to get the raw audio of the Thanksgiving episode just for my own personal use.
Maybe you could bribe him in coming back, Joe. I don't know how, but maybe.
Maybe I could ply him with gifts.
There you go.
Anyway, anytime any of these folks, of course, show up on other shows and they let me that they showed up on those other shows, we'll be sure to share them over at soon2benamednetwork.com. Be sure to check out our friends and the other stuff that they're doing in and around the internet. Go check out Mike Sterling's blog over at progressiveruin.com. I feel he attempted to bait you today with his latest blog post.
Oh, yeah.
Go check out our friend Kevin's blog over at HellionsTeam.com. Be sure to check out Rick Williams' The Chop Shop over at FreeKarateChops.StoreEnvy.com. Be sure to check out Jason Sandberg's Jupiter over at his Indiegogo page. You can buy it a la carte with any as many as or as little of the accoutrements as you want. Be sure to check out Chris Runt's Battle Monsters over at FortressOfComicNews.com. Our friend Davey of the band Cave People has his own self-published comics as well, both digital and in print. I think the print ones are starting to dry up a little bit, but you can get them over at CaveDomainComics.com. And if you do not have a comic book store in your area, or you do not have a good comic book store in your area, let our store be your store, Comics on the Green. We have their Facebook page linked up. That's when Dave and the crew will let you know final order cutoff dates for the latest and greatest books that are coming out don't be shut out at the 11th hour and miss out on the latest whatever you like.
Mm-hmm.
Be sure to sign up for their mail order subscription service as well. Get your books sent to you weekly, bi-weekly, monthly. And if you do, there's a chance that you can get a sketch on the package from our good friend Becky, who we're going to turn things over to now for her walk down Lois Lane.
Welcome back to my walk down Lois Lane. So Todd came into the store, tears in his eyes, and begged me to cover today's story. This is issue 74 from 1967. Why does he want me to cover this issue? You'll see why, so let's dive in. Jimmy and Lois are about to die from a building falling on them while investigating a fire. Superman isn't coming to save them because the entire Justice League are doing important arguing on another world. I love that it cuts to Superman arguing with the Flash that he's taken too long at this meeting. Meanwhile, a diamond-shaped capsule crashes to Earth, and inside is a man in a coma. He's dressed like Reverse Flash, the yellow suit, but he has a hammer on his crest instead of a lightning bolt. Perry sends Lois to investigate, and she arrives at the hospital where Walmart Reverse Flash is in a coma. Superman appears, and she asks him to help revive the man because he's kind of cute. Superman makes a machine that electrocutes him to try to wake him up, but when that doesn't work, he tells Lois, "I gotta go," and flies away. Since this man is going nowhere and there's other stories to cover, Lois decides to give him a Sleeping Beauty kiss before leaving, and he wakes up instantly. He says his name is Hero, and he's here to save the day. He tells Lois thank you for the kiss, and he wants to show her how much he appreciates it. He grabs her camera, melts it in his hand, and she just thinks that's a strange custom from his world. A fire has broken out on a nearby ship, and Lois asks Hero if he can do anything about it. He says yes, but only if she agrees to come with him, and she's smitten by his attraction to her. She agrees, and he immediately grabs her by her hair and drags her across the ocean. He drops her in the water, swims around the ship, sinks it, and praises himself for a job well done. I love this man, and so does Lois. As she's daydreaming about him at the Daily Planet and bragging to Lana she has yet another superhero interested in her, Hero faces through the wall, asks out Lois, answers the ringing phone for a company he doesn't work for, and then immediately tells Lana the phone call was about a hot scoop locating a convicted felon. Lois slaps him. Oh my gosh, she slaps him and tells him how dare he give away her secrets to Lana. He goes to hit her back but kisses her instead. Turns out he gave Lana the wrong address and the two go to the cave to find the felon. The felon shoots at Hero. That doesn't work on Superman. Why did this dude think it would work on this guy? But the bullets pass through and Hero pushes past Lois to chase him, trapping her inside the cave. Superman rescues her and makes a comment about being boy crazy chasing a weirdo, but she tells him Hero is sweet and he has weird customs, don't be so judgmental. They go outside and the felon shoots at Lois. Hero runs up and holds her in the line of fire. Superman's had enough. He knocks out the felon and tells Hero he knows where he's from and he has to leave Lois alone. They begin to fight and Hero's kicking Superman's butt until Lois screams in horror he's changing into a Bizarro. Turns out, over on Bizarro World, they're making their own Justice League with Poca and Men. They give powers to one of them to make a Flash, but he turns out pretty and can speak well, so they toss him over to Earth. He has amnesia, so he legit thought he was the Flash, but getting smacked around by Superman has reversed the ray he was shot with. Now he's back to being a Bizarro, he tells them Lois is ugly, this place smells too nice, and he wants to go home. Superman takes him back, and Lois decides to swear off of all heroes but Superman. So this Bizarro Flash has no affiliation with the 2007 one from Action Comics 856. The 2007 one was still created by Bizarro number one, that's Superman, as part of the Justice League, but our friend was erased from DC history in the 85 Crisis on Infinite Earths. Actually, side note, Catwoman's brother Carl Kyle was also erased from that too. Hopefully Todd is satisfied with my retelling and I no longer have to hear him go on and on about it at the shop. Tune in next week for more Lois Lane.
And hopefully this means Todd will finally leave Becky alone.
That's right, with tears in my eyes, Joe, tears in my eyes.
Hang on, I'm moving the microphone away from me just a little bit. And I'm moving away from the microphone, okay?
Right.
With a tear in my eye! That's how you were doing it. You were cutting like a Ric Flair 1992 promo, hair a mess, wow, specs rocks always... everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I'll say this. That's exactly how I was coming in the shop. And I'm just going to say, next time I'm in the shop, somebody's going to have tears in their eyes.
Are you bringing an onion with you?
What?
Are you bringing an onion with you?
Yes, I am. Dust the onions, Joe. But I'll tell you that one thing. She can give as good as she can get. Oh, boy. But I did want to see this issue done because this is the only Lois Lane, my Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane, that I have in my collection. I always thought it was hysterical. One of the things that I did like is the reason, and she didn't mention, is that he has a hammer on his chest, is because when they use the Bizarro Ray to like scan the Flash, they're at a hearing and somebody's talking and they're banging the gavel. So as they're banging the gavel, it goes in front of his Flash symbol when they hit the button on the Ray. So it's like, oh, okay. And I was like, I kind of have to have the first appearance of Bizarro Flash. But it is totally like, they totally, totally like give away the ghost all through the book. You know what I mean? Like, it's not hard to figure out. You're maybe not Bizarro Flash, but he's definitely Flash related, especially if you look at the costume. I do own one Lois Lane, Joe.
I'm a fan of pre-1985 comics material. Mm-hmm. Where it's very clearly an evil version of the character.
Right.
And we're just like, huh. Like, we, the reader, see the colors, the color of the costume is different. They have a different logo. They have facial hair. Like, there's very clear, like, visual signs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then their actions are completely different. But everybody else in the book is like, huh. Superman sure is acting strange today.
Yeah.
And then it's not until somebody says aloud to them, that's not Superman, that's somebody posing as Superman.
Oh, no! And then
finally, it makes sense to them.
Right, right.
Like, that was a common trope, not just in comics, but I think in most, like, sci-fi fantasy media.
Yep.
From the 50s up until 1985. And that's one of the things, as Becky mentioned, that I think Crisis on Infinite Earth fixed.
Right. And I will say this, keep your filthy Catwoman brother pre-Crisis out of my Bizarro Flash story.
You could have waited King of Cats? To
mention that in another one. What?
You mean King of Cats?
Yeah, King of Cats, who helped me win the second best Rogues Gallery in comics.
Oh, goodness. All right. Well, again, thank you very much, Becky. For finally acquiescing to Todd's crying and whining and complaining.
You know what? Of course you're
doing,
on your side.
And doing one for him. Listen, you are a jab artist, right?
What?
And she's more of a knockout blow type person.
She is a Tyson. She is a Tyson.
For every 10 of yours, for every 10 of yours, she gets one. But that one is just as good as your 10.
Mm-hmm. She hit him with a haymaker. That's gotta hurt.
All right, let's get into what we read from this past week. Let's get into, actually, Todd, where would you like to begin?
I'm going to start with the book I was looking forward to most, which is Nightwing 112, written by Tom Taylor, art by Sam Bassari. This is the second part of a two-part story where Nightwing is investigating the murder of this guy, and he has a young son, and his uncle is taking over. And through pieces, he puts together that we learned this last issue, that the uncle has killed the father so he can inherit the money and he run away with the kid. And Batman and Nightwing are slowly figuring this out, and then they go and chase him, you know, back to their family's from Vietnam, so they're like, we have to go. But the meat and potatoes of this for me is, that's all a great story, is Batman showing up because Nightwing's having this trouble with being scared of heights, which is weird for Nightwing as an acrobat, and he's going to help him with the case. And we see flashbacks of Batman. Like, I get goosebumps when Alfred is like a father to Batman or any of the other kids, but I also get a slight lump in my throat whenever Bruce calls one of his kids son. You know, like, that's a great moment. And we see Batman training young Dick Grayson in the Batcave and explaining, like, the only place you can unleash everything, all your rage, is here. like, out there, we don't want to hurt, like, people. We want to, you know, have them face justice. And that's a great scene. It's like, but in here, just unload. And then when he goes after this guy who wrecked this guy's family, it's like, is he or is he not going to unload? Like, is this the thing that makes Nightwing snap on the guy? And I do love that. It's like, because they do it well. Is he or isn't he? And then along the way, Batman, like, dispensing Batman advice to people that aren't Nightwing, like when Changeling comes up to him, is like, you know, I'm thinking about retiring, and he gives him the straightforward, no punches pulled Batman advice. That's really cool. It's always fun to see Batman and Nightwing work together, and Tom Taylor is such a great writer. It works so well, and then the art is so great. It's not Bruno Redondo, but I really like all the art. It's beautifully colored. Would be fine if he was drawing the book all the time. I love the ending of this two-parter.
Yep. And again, you know, obviously when you'd mentioned it, it was a two-part issue. The first part, you know, obviously setting up all the stuff that you mentioned, and so much of the strength of the Tom Taylor stuff that he's been doing on Nightwing, and I know that they've been teasing, like, an end is coming. And that will be very sad. We kind of talked off mic here about how there's character defining runs that creators have in recent history that not so much ruins the character for the next people that come on. You know, we could talk about Daredevil so much where it almost felt like going all the way back to the Kevin Smith run, into the Bendis run, into the Brubaker run, and so on and so forth, that every time one of those writers would leave the book, they would kind of break the book. To see if the next writer coming on could fix it. But so much of the character stuff, and, you know, Tom Taylor, Nightwing, Teen Titans, Beast World stuff, we got to see a bit in Titans Beast World of Raven kind of talking to Batman and putting him in his place. And as much as I love that, the scene that you mentioned with Batman and Beast Boy here was great.
Right.
I like when these parts of the world kind of mixed together with the same creator, the same writer. But the other thing, you know, the part that came into this, and whether this is going to be something that kind of gets closed with this little two-part story, obviously one would assume that it is, but the fact that this guy, Loke, who, you know, put the whole scam together to kidnap the nephew because of what he was the heir to the fortune of, that he set it up as though he was a copycat of Heartless, which is the new villain that Tom Taylor introduced in his run on Nightwing here. Now, is that going to be like a one and done thing? Or, you know, now is the fact that someone was copying Heartless, is Heartless coming back for revenge? Are we going to see more copycats of Heartless?
I honestly think that this is going to kickstart the hunt for Heartless. Do you know what I mean? Like this, because he's so mad at what happened. It's like, well, you know what? On top of this, he used this guy's MO to, like, try and hide it. It's about time I took, not that he wasn't taking it seriously, you know what I mean? But the end is near. Like, I have to finish this up right here, right now. And I think that's what's going to slide us in to the end of Tom Taylor's run, whatever it is, you know?
Right.
And I also think maybe the kid, we may see the kid again.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that something's going to happen with that character. Maybe show. Maybe he's like Nightwing's Robin at some point.
That would be interesting.
Yep, but that's all I have on that.
All right. So the other book that I read, that we both read, was Cobra Commander number 3, written by Joshua Williamson with art by Andrea Milana. So at the end of issue 2, Cobra Commander is on Earth from Cobra Law with a guide who we don't know who it is. Someone from Cobra Law, and I mentioned before, I love the mixing of, like, all the nonsense of G.I. Joe, from the toys to the cartoon to the comics, and all of it kind of coming to a head here. But nothing I love more when it comes to G.I. Joe stuff than the Dreadnoughts. And the Dreadnoughts are who get the jump on Cobra Commander. They're trying to get his mask off him, and they figured out that he's here because the Dreadnoughts have, as they call it, the juice, which is an Energon cube, which is how they're running all of their stuff, right?
Right.
So, no Zartan here, but we get, like, the big guns of the Dreadnoughts. We got Torch, Ripper, Buzzer. We get the brother and sister of Zorana and Xandar, and tied to a chair with no weapons at all, Cobra Commander pretty much takes out like the heavy hitters of the Dreadnoughts just by being a manipulator. And it's so great. You know, there's the one part, there's a like the one part where they come in and he starts like back and talk just a little bit. And I think it's Zorana says, "Who do you think you are?" And she says, "Your future master." And I'm just like, oh, what a great Cobra Commander line, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then we get at the end a big reveal. And listen, if we're talking Cobra Commander, we're talking Cobra Law, we're talking Galobulus sent someone. You're familiar with the G.I. Joe movie. You know who shows up at the end of this issue. And it's all cool. And the art is great. And this is the G.I. Joe stuff that I love. Yeah, listen, I like Duke and whomever else has shown up in Transformers. And I like the way the Transformers stuff is coming along. But I didn't need, like, you know, to read the G.I. Joe book. I like the bad guys when it comes to G.I. Joe. Mm-hmm. If there was two Transformers books and one was called Autobots and one was called the Decepticons, I'd probably only be buying the Auto or the Decepticons book.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a fun book. Like I said, it's like reading all my toy comic cartoon adventures all rolled into one as an old man, and I love it. It's very much nostalgia, you know, member berries, all the things that everyone says is bad and poisoning you, but I don't do a ton of it. I do a little bit of it, and it's okay.
I didn't like this as much as you did, but I love to OD on member berries, so sue me. You know what I mean? But I had fun with this because I'm with you. I like, even if it wasn't Cobra Commander and it was anybody else, I do like the guy who has everybody's number while they have him at their mercy.
Yes.
It's like, you are wrecking me. Like, I'm chained up, but I'm wrecking you guys worse just with the sound of my voice. And that's a great bit. I like the bit when they try to take the mask off and then the art from his point of view, every panel after they show his point of view from the mask. That's kind of cool. And they do a bit with the blood on his mask that is so ridiculous, but it's so cool. And like when he finally does get the upper hand, that it looks ridiculous, but you know, you should be scared. But all the rest of it, like I said, that's not my cup of tea. I read this because it was your pick of the week. I'm not getting Cobra Commander. This could inch me into getting it as a miniseries, but I'm probably just going to tap out. If this was Starscream, maybe a couple other, you know, people from G.I. Joe that I like, maybe, but I don't want to jump full-fledged into the G.I. Joe Transformer world. That's for other people better than I, but fun issue. I'll definitely give you that.
Well, are you reading Transformers?
No, I tapped out early on.
Okay, so where, you know, obviously it's the Energon universe, and I'm not getting everything. I'm not getting Void Rivals. I'm not getting the G.I. Joe books. I'm not getting everything. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sticking to the creators that I know and I like. But where everything is going is, you know, with the Transformers, specifically the Decepticons on Earth, Megatron is gone. Mm-hmm. And I think we talked about it before, is that Cobra Commander has a powerless Megatron kind of like under wraps in Cobra Law. Nobody else knows that he has him there. They just know he's working on something and they don't know what it is.
Right.
And that's why Cobra Commander is on Earth to get the Energon. But obviously, like, it's to power up Megatron to use Megatron. But Megatron is like, oh, as soon as I have this Energon, I'm going to get rid of this Cobra Commander guy. He's a bum, right?
Yeah, I love when everybody's betraying everybody.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And then, obviously, with all the Transformers stuff, like, if you're a Decepticon and you're betraying someone, your name's Starscream. That's all there is to it, you know?
That's right.
There's a good bit, and again, we're not talking about Transformers, but we are talking about Transformers. There's a great bit where at the end of the most recent issue, Starscream leaves Soundwave behind.
As you should.
And Optimus Prime is like, listen, you know, he left you behind. I know we've been at war for centuries, if not eons, but, and Optimus Prime like reaches out his hand.
Mm-hmm.
to Soundwave, and it's like such a great scene. You know,
listen, that Decepticon symbol don't run, Joe.
Once you're a Decepticon, you're Decepticon for life. Is that what they
say? That's right. You bleed purple.
But I know I've been enjoying this stuff of the Energon, you know, universe stuff. And as Todd mentioned, he tapped out on a little bit of it. I'm only getting a couple things, but the more and more I read this stuff, the more and more I want to get the stuff that I'm not getting.
Right. So you should get it all.
Yeah. We'll see.
Anyway,
That's what we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around noon Eastern time, we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them sent to your home, however it is you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out this week. Todd and I attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. Todd is currently in the lead over me with one correct guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at your list.
Small list.
I'm going to guess the book that you're most looking forward to coming out this week is Newbern 16.
It is Newbern 16.
Oh, yeah.
That is the finale of the Newbern storyline. I haven't really talked about Newbern much because there was a problem with me getting the books due to I was forgetting that they were coming out that week because they were the two different lists that we're having. Remember when they were contradicting each other?
Right. About 2 or 3 weeks ago, even further, there was some issues. Yeah. There. And, you know, Todd uses one site. I cross-reference four sites. Mm-hmm. And the four sites that I cross-reference and Todd's one site all had completely different lists of books coming out. So it was very confusing. Yes.
Right. And they did that with the Enfield Gang Massacre there for a while. So I was having to wait for, like, they would sell out at the shop because I didn't tell them to put it, to give it to me. That was my own fault. Do you know what I mean? And it would be like, okay, we have to reorder it. So I would be getting the next issue before the issue I had. So now I'm literally going to sit down and read 1 through 16 in a run again. And I'm kind of looking forward to it. And when it comes to Forsythe, the only Forsythe I trust is Robert Forsythe.
That you're going to say William Forsythe, because that's who I
William
trust.
Forsythe should have been a better joke that way. But I'm looking over your list, and I'm probably going to end up, you know, making a tie instead of being one ahead of you. But is the book you're looking forward to most Batman Dark Age number one?
It's not.
Okay.
So I'm getting Batman Dark Age. So I'm getting Batman Dark Age because the creative team. It's Mark Russell. It's Mike Allred. I liked Superman Space Age.
Yep.
I liked it. It was okay. It was delayed a bunch. It came out like once every like 3 to 4 months.
Right.
And it was a prestige at like 64 pages. So it was a lot to consume and then wait like 3 to 4 months for the next issue. And I'm getting this cause I like the treat team and I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt in the hopes that, you know, cause the Superman one ended up being less about Superman and more about like Justice League.
Right.
Whereas Batman, at least from the solicitation, sounds like it's going to be more Batman-centric.
Right. And I read, like, I read Space Age 2. I liked it less than you, probably. And I didn't love the Batman that was in it. So I was like, all right, listen, you know me. I'm a Mark Russell guy, piano and all. But I'm just like, I could tap out on this. I read those three Space Age issues, and I was kind of like, whatever, so.
The other side of it is, I like to support the creators that I like, being the fact that it may only come out once every, like, 2 to 3 months. It's right. Not going to be a huge hit on my pocketbook, and I may just sit and wait until all three parts are out and then just read the whole thing in one sitting.
Right.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But the book I'm most looking forward to coming
out. That's right, your book.
Yeah, the book I'm most looking forward to coming out this week is Zorro 3.
Gotcha.
I was pleasantly surprised by the first issue. I really like the second issue, and I'm excited for the third issue.
Here, but like I said, just closing off a book kind of gave it the edge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the Chip Zdarsky Substack, I recall him putting out, I think he has this coming out this week, and he has like a new collection, like a 10th anniversary collection of Sex Criminals, which is crazy to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember when Chip Zdarsky was just an artist for Matt Fraction?
Vaguely, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So those are the books, maybe more, maybe less, that we'll be talking about next week. While you're over at longboxheroes.com, of course, be sure to check out the past episodes of this show, past episodes of Longbox Heroes After Dark, and of course, be sure to check out our current ongoing Todd and Joe Have Issues, where we are reading the entire run of Gail Simone's Secret Six. We're actually finishing up the first miniseries that she did of Secret Six.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, written by her, art by Brad Walker, inks by Jimmy Palmiotti. This is like, this is one of those stories that I think, you know, obviously knowing what we know and how everything ends up, that this gets, you know, a lot more play, you know, gets two almost full series after this, that if this was just this 6-issue miniseries and this was it, I think this would be one of those books that people would look back on and say, this should have been a hit. Why wasn't this a hit? Why wasn't mm-hmm. this like one of the biggest books of all time? And, you know, obviously this kind of trails into when we were doing the original show, Three Guys from Nowhere, all those years ago. You know, at the end of the year, like Secret Six always ended up being on like our top book of the year.
Yeah, it was always so good, man. Yeah. So, I mean, I know we're going to be talking about, you just don't fluke into our all-time best that we've been doing. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like you just don't go, all right, we're doing Sandman and we're doing something dumb after that. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't happen.
Right. Cause in between this series ending and the next series picking up, mm-hmm. it's like 2 years in between the two series is coming out. Like, you get the little bit of them in Birds of Prey, but it's 2 years between the end of this miniseries and the ongoing.
Right.
Which is crazy to think about.
You know what? I never knew that off the top of my head. You know what I mean? Like, I figured it was like this. Obviously, there is the gap because they appear in Birds of Prey. But I was like, all right, maybe 6 months after that appearance, at most, we get the Secret Six. But you're telling me, you know, it's 2 years between this and the next one. That blows my mind.
Yep. Like, obviously going by cover dates and stuff, you know, things do get a little muddy, if you will.
Wonky, yeah.
It could be a year and a half, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But so the cover date of issue 6 here is January 2007. And the cover date of the ongoing is November 2008. So it's like 22 months in between issue 6 and issue 1.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, where we left off of the last issue, of course, full assault on Vandal Savage's city. The only thing that's stopping Dr. Psycho from taking out the Six is Mad Hatter. And Mad Hatter gets stopped with a shiv by Lady Shiva. And I always say Lady Shiva, it's Cheshire, though, right?
Right, which makes it better because that's the name of a character in Alice in Wonderland.
In Alice in Wonderland. And this is... this is like I would say one of the more Mad Hattery issues that we get.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, every week that we talk about this and I'm like, oh, why wasn't Mad Hatter a bigger deal after this? Why wasn't Mad Hatter a bigger deal? And we get why, and then we kind of don't get why, I guess would be the best way. So,
right.
It starts off from the poison that Mad Hatter is hallucinating, that all the characters, all the events that are going around him are taking place in Alice in Wonderland type things, where Knockout is like the Queen of Hearts, Catman and Deadshot are Tweedledee and Tweedledum, you know, that sort of thing, as he's kind of looking at everything. Dr. Psycho is the hare.
Yep.
Whatever his name is.
And who's Cheshire again?
Cheshire's the Cheshire Cat.
Oh, I didn't see the symbolism, but go ahead.
Come on. Now, obviously, they are trying to shake Mad Hatter out of this, and there is a bit in here that is a little randy for this book, but it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Where Mad Hatter describes Scandal's backside like two ripe balloons glued together with love.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's reading this issue that is why my Facebook algorithm is so messed up.
Mm-hmm. I will say I did hear a phrase in my younger days, like two puppies playing gently under a tarp. So this always spoke to me, the slideshow.
Yes. So obviously they're able to shake Mad Hatter out of this. We get another face-off between Cheshire and Catman. And we get another bit where in the middle of fighting, in the middle of battle, Cheshire makes a proposition to Catman that maybe they should stop dancing and do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And Catman says, "Your womb is the most god-awful dangerous weapon I've ever faced. Worse than that, I can't believe I'm considering this."
Such this climax to the story has such great, like, dialogue.
Yes.
It is, like, take away the beautiful, like, stuff. Like, there's a bit where Knockout sees Scandal after they've been apart, and there's just a shot of her, like, "I'm coming to you," and whipping two thugs over her shoulder, and they're just tiny dots in the sky. Like, just great visuals. But the line, like, the line about, like, the derriere and this and that, and then there's later one with Scandal telling Knockout that "my father hates disorganization," and they hit that beat three times, and it's better each time they hit it. And, like, you think there'd be diminishing returns. Uh-uh. Gail is, like, on full bore with all the stuff in this issue.
Right, and, you know, the Catman line that he says there, and then Cheshire responds with, as we're talking about the dialogue, where Cheshire responds, "finally someone who gets me."
Yep.
You know, like, the character, and that's the thing, is, like, these aren't characters that had Saturday morning cartoons or hundreds if not thousands of stories told about them. So if you want to play a little fast and loose with the dialogue here, it's okay, because we talked about it all the way back in Villains United when we were talking about that. These are characters that were more or less blank slates. Mm-hmm. And it's Gail Simone who is breathing life into these characters with their actions and their dialogue. And, of course, the artists are helping, you know, Val Semeckis, Dale Eaglesham, and, of course, Brad Walker on this issue. And there's the issue again. There's a part here. We talk about the art where Mad Hatter goes inside and he confronts Dr. Psycho, you know, essentially calling him a coward for running. And we get that panel at the bottom of the page where it's just the close-up of Mad Hatter. And it's, like, all in purples and reds and blacks.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the most frightening panels ever. If I showed that to anyone who has seen Mad Hatter stories from Batman the Animated Series to wherever you've seen the Mad Hatter, and I show you that, and I'm like, this is what Mad Hatter can be. And then you get the shots of, like, the red and the blood. And
beyond that, it's brilliance in its equality of the characters. In the fact that they're the same stature and the same mental powers. So, like, it's like, all right, we rip people apart mentally, but because we can't do that to each other, it's fisticuffs at dawn. And because we're the same, you know, height-ish, it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's beyond brilliant as far as I'm concerned, if that makes any sense.
Right.
Just a great battle I never thought I would see. A fist fight between Mad Hatter and Dr. Psycho.
And even while this is going on, Mad Hatter still has Cheshire's poison coursing through his veins. It's not until after he dispatches of Dr. Psycho before Catman is finally able to get the antidote to actually get Mad Hatter at full strength, right?
Mm-hmm.
So while this is going on, Deadshot and Ragdoll are taking care of the goons. Vandal Savage and Scandal Savage are having their tete-a-tete, and Knockout is essentially destroying the palace to help cause a distraction, of course, but also Scandal is like, "My father cares more about this building than any of the people in it, so while I'm taking care of him, just destroy this place."
Right. The way she says it, though, there's two panels, and I get goosebumps every time I read it, where Scandal's, like, talking to Knockout, and she's like, "This was his favorite house, Kay, and he despises disorder. Displease him for me." And then as Knockout's kissing her, she just goes, "You're the only thing Darkseid ever did right." I'm like, not only is it an action book, not only is it a horror book, it's also a romance. How many things are we doing in this book, Joe?
We're doing it all.
we're doing it all. And then she's like, she ends up going in the house and she's like, okay, he despises disorder. That's great because I am disorder. Another great, like, Western, like, motif line. Kind of like, I'm just going to take everything. This, it's so good, Joe. I'm sorry I'm gushing so much, but go ahead.
So as the house is being destroyed, Vandal and Scandal fall. Scandal is holding on to the brick, the mortar. She has the hand on everything. She is holding on to Vandal Savage. She could save him. He allows himself to let go. But she's still barely hanging on by a thread. Mad Hatter comes over, and he begins to toy with Scandal. Why? Because once, she knocked his hat off.
Yeah, and good he's enough about reason to kill for the Hatter.
Him. Yes. Mm-hmm. And Ragdoll comes over, and Ragdoll, the unlikely voice of reason, says, you know, listen, you know, look at me. I know what it means to love something and have people not understand. We're your friends. We only want to help. And then that kind of snaps Mad Hatter too. And then as I'm reading this, and Ragdoll and Mad Hatter are having their moment together, that's when it all came flooding back to me. I'm like, oh yes, I remember what happens. So we get this moment where Ragdoll convinces Mad Hatter to let Scandal come up. Mad Hatter is like, thank you so much. You know, obviously I've had a very rough life, and you know, it's good to have friends, and I've never had a friend before, and now I've got several. And Ragdoll pushes them off the cliff and says, unfortunately, I'm afraid there's only room on this team for one dandy freak.
Joe. Joe.
So ridiculous.
Oh my God, he talks him down, and it's such a touching moment. You know what I mean? It's such a touching moment. So touching that he touches Mad Hatter right off the side of the building. So this was one of those scenes, like you say, it all came flooding back. When we started this run, my mind immediately went to, oh my God, I can't wait until Ragdoll pushes Mad Hatter off the building. Because that scene is etched in my mind, because Gale takes you down a road and then makes a sudden lurch to one side. I never saw this coming. This was one of those, when I read this back in the day, this was a we talked about it in the comic book shop moment. Like, the next time everybody was in the comic shop, was like, did you read Secret 66? Yes. Do you believe? And they were like, no. Like, that was crazy. I love that scene.
Yes.
And then go ahead.
Right, guys, you know, obviously we were talking again off mic about our good friend Brett, who is, you know, just discovering comic books for the first time in his life. So mm-hmm. he's getting to see a lot of tropes that we've kind of become like old hat with over the past 40 plus years. He's getting to see them for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting here thinking to myself of like, how much comic knowledge does Brett need to read Thunderbolts number one?
I don't know.
Okay.
So probably none, because those are all new characters, Joe.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So then I sit here and I say, how much comic book knowledge does Brett need to read Secret Six?
None, as far as I'm concerned.
And I could definitively say none, because everything you need to know about these characters is in these books.
Yep.
And it's great. And it's one of those things where, you know, you talked about how at the time it was the talk of the comic book store, and we get to the ongoing, and I would say there's like at least that I could remember off the top of my head, like five or six moments like that are like, oh my God, moments. I can't wait to talk to someone about these.
And I remember I did with a couple. I had to drag people kicking and screaming on this, and it took the ongoing to do it. They weren't on at this point. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, you fools, you.
This was something that I had my wife reading. This is something that I had my brother reading. This is something that I had maybe people that wrestle on TV Wednesdays reading that I may have lost. Like, I used to have, like, the single issues and the trades of this. mm-hmm. and I ain't got the trades no more of this.
Right.
Because they're split up between two people who wrestle on TV.
Oh, my God. Joe, pick that up there, that name.
I didn't say anybody's names. I just said they could be anybody.
We know who they are. Oh, they are. Even I know who they are.
All right. It's Phil and no. It's Bird Bones and the other two.
Right. But anyway.
So to wrap this all up, you know, Ragdoll comes back and they're like, hey, where's Hatter? And he's like, it's the oddest thing. He decided to stay. Yeah. He sends his regards. Nice man, but of a bit of a weirdo, if you ask me. Oh my God. All this is so great, right?
That's saying something.
And again, we get these great Ragdoll moments at the end. Now I will say, as this issue has, you know, as this series has gone on here, Ragdoll out of the mask is started to be drawn a little less grotesque.
Right.
And I think that's to kind of help soften him a little bit because he's doing such horrible things.
Maybe.
Right. That's just a theory now here, having, read this, but of course, you know, he laments the others, and, you know, their children and progeny and wanting to have children. And of course, if you just adopt like he did and get a gaggle of capuchin monkeys that you dress up like parademons, then that's a much more loving parental relationship.
Not just parademons, though, Joe.
Oh, it's all the members of the team. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And the other thing that I always thought that was ahead of its time for, like, even in, what was it? We said this book was, what, 2006? 2007-ish?
2006 and it's 7. Yeah,
2006. Yes, 2007-ish. So either way, is like, they're like, oh, okay. Well, what about you, Scandal? And she's like, I'm going to make sure I'm never be able to have kids again. Like, and it's such an off-handed comment. And like, she uses the name of the procedure. And I'm like, even in 2007, I'm like, whoa. You know what I mean? Because that wasn't something that was talked about in mainstream comics.
Right.
And I was just blown away by it. And then you think the book's over, Joe. You think the book's over, and it's not. There's a tiny little epilogue, right?
Right. We get the little bit where Mad Hatter essentially says that he's going to get his revenge on those people, but not you, my friend, my only friend. And he's there tattered and torn, cuddling his hat, and it says, the end. And, so yeah.
Because the fact that they lay it down, that's all he ever wanted was the friend. And he thought Ragdoll talked him into it. And he thought he had them, Joe. Yeah. And then in the end, the only thing he really has is his hats. And that's, I would say, the heart, but the head of Mad Hatter.
And this does come back.
What? No, I thought this was the end of it.
It's, and again, it's about another 2 years and change before this gets revisited.
The long game.
Yes. So next week, what we will be reading is going to be Birds of Prey 104.
Yep.
Now there's been some, and I don't want to say discrepancies or some confusion or miscommunication in regards to what is or what isn't. Because in the middle of this run, it's Gail Simone's run on Birds of Prey. She ends up leaving the book. And she's going to be doing the Secret Six ongoing. I think Tony Bedard takes over the book.
Right.
And, you know, obviously we're just reading one issue, issue 104. But we have issues 104, 105, 106, 107, and the first two pages of 108, which is the issue where Tony Bedard takes over the book.
Right.
So when we get there, and this is this stuff is collected in the Birds of Prey collection called Whitewater. It is going to be collected in the upcoming Secret Six Omnibus that's coming out in May. Right. When we get there, obviously we're doing 104 this week, 105 next week, 106 the week after that. Week after that, we're going to read 107 and those two pages in 108.
Right. Okay. Because somebody's a stickler. But anyway.
They count.
Mm-hmm.
They count. So yeah, I'm loving revisiting this stuff. I'm disgusted in myself how much I forgot, but I'm enjoying revisiting it almost for the first time.
And you know what, Joe? I'm enjoying you enjoying revisiting it.
Thank you very much. Of course you are.
You're welcome.
So also while you're over at longboxheroes.com, course, you could purchase pins and stickers and shirts with our fancy logo on them. Shoot me a message. I don't know. I'll figure out the store thing eventually. That's definitely why the shirts aren't moving, right?
It's gotta be.
You can make any and all of your purchases on eBay through our eBay affiliate link. This page contains affiliate links for eBay. We may receive a small commission on purchases you make. You could use this affiliate link at any time you want to buy anything on eBay and help us at the same time.
Yeah.
But the best and most important way to help us out would be to sign up for our Patreon, patreon.com/longboxheroes. For as little as $1 a month, you're going to get 2 bonus shows from Todd and myself. One is Comic Book Oddities, where we look at some of the stranger, lesser known, more forgotten, pre-Marvel Cinematic Universe, failed pilots sort of thing, comic book stuff that they tried to get going in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. We're just fresh off watching the 2-episode television event based on Malibu Comics' Nightman.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, indeed. And, of course, the other show is Previewing the Past, where we look at 30 years ago this month's previews catalog. We do have March 1994 fresh in the hopper there for any level you are at the Patreon. The $5 and up folks are going to get the shows 2 weeks before everyone else. And you're also going to get Longbox Heroes After Dark 2 days before everyone else, so you can listen to the shows in the correct listening order. Also, any subscription level that you have gets access to our Discord, which is connected to a bunch of the other shows in the soon-to-be-named network as well. Join in on the conversation there. If you're sick and tired of other forms of social media, we promise you there will be no scantily clad women unless you specifically go looking for them, and it's very clearly labeled where that is.
That's right.
Also, you get the full scans of those preview catalogs that we discuss on the podcast, and we have the full scans of those up going all the way back to 1990. So if you're a new person to the show and you remember getting into comics around Todd McFarlane's Spider-Man number one, you remember getting into comics around Jim Lee's X-Men number one, you remember getting into comics around the death of Superman, we have those catalogs fully scanned, expertly done, high quality, up on our previews. You can listen to us talk about those, but you can even digitally thumb through those and kind of relive your past, putting on those nostalgia goggles as we seemingly love to do all the time.
Right. I'm sad that you didn't mention Silver Surfer 50 in there, by the way. But anyway.
It's not as important as the other books I mentioned.
It was the first, but anyway.
So we got no TV to talk about. We got nothing really coming up until the new season of Doctor Who starts on the 10th of May, which is just coming up in about 6 weeks or so here. But this past weekend, my wife and I had some time, and we watched season 2 of Good Omens.
Oh, did you? I have not watched that yet. It's shocking.
Yes. So no spoilers, but what happens at the end, 3 days later, my wife was still cursing Aziraphale's name for the decision that he makes.
Gotcha. But I'll have to sit down and watch. I know we're getting a season 3, which should be the final one, they said.
Oh, they, like I said, it's definitely a cliffhanger at the end of season 2.
Okay. I was up against it.
Yeah.
Because I said, like, the first book was done. The two of them talked about doing a sequel to the book. They never did it. So it's like, they had like a germ of an idea and they had notes. So I was like, do we need to do a sequel? No, but I'll probably watch it. And I've been dragging my feet. But since you watched it, I feel dirty that I haven't. So
it's definitely fun. It definitely feels as though, you know, I think it got released like in full, like all 6 episodes dropped at once. And we've talked before on how like we're not fans of that. It kind of makes it feel like more of a chore, whatever it is.
For the show, mostly for me, but go ahead.
Yeah. Like, right, to review and discuss for the show, but not having the whatever of we have to watch it for the show. We ended up watching it over 2 days.
Yeah.
You know, and it definitely worked better and weaved better watching it all twice, I guess, you know. Now conversely, when we're done with that and we get a chance to sit down and watch something else, I might try to convince her to watch the new X-Men cartoon that's on Disney Plus.
Right.
Or I might try to get her to watch Invincible. I'm not sure.
Gotcha. Somebody, your other co-host was trying to get me to watch Invincible.
Yeah.
I started watching X-Men 97, but the original one.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, if I'm going to watch this, I'm going to get caught up and watch all the episodes. And I watched the first two and I was like, maybe I'll just jump right into the, maybe I'll jump right into the new one if I'm going to do it. But Joe, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring for a show you and April should watch. And I've discussed this off mic with you because the season finale was tonight, I believe. And I'm immediately going to watch it when we're done recording. Is Night Court, man. I am in love. Like, Night Court season one started slow, but by the time, because I think they didn't want to get into the wackiness of the original Night Court right out of the gate. They didn't want to, like, jar people. But by the time we get to season two, there's, like, you know, the basketball game that you, like, you go to the arcade and you shoot the ball and you get points for it and it's a smaller rim and everything like that. They bring that into an episode and it's it like speaks like three-pointer, good one, and then slowly becomes sentient. Like, it starts saying things it shouldn't, and then, like, at the end they're like, this basketball game wasn't even plugged in, and it just goes, that's Night Court, baby. And I'm like, I'm in on it all the way. And then Bob and June Wheeler, the original actors, came back with their kid, who's Kate Micucci. And I was like, of all the episodes, that was the best one. And I was like, oh, Kate's not going to do justice to the Wheeler family. And she may have been funnier than Bob and June Wheeler. And I absolutely adore this show.
Is there a laugh track on it?
I don't know. That's how good. Like, I'll let you know next time I watch it. I'll X at you later when I watch.
Oh my goodness! I have to see what April's I don't know if she watched Night Court growing up.
Yeah, if she didn't, then maybe it wouldn't work.
Yeah, I have to get, I have to test those waters, I think.
Yep. But as an old Night Court fan, this definitely does get the Todd nod, especially the second season. And one of the things that might, like, bring you around if you're ever going to do it is Dan Foley showed up on the episode as, like a butler to, like, a nobleman. And he has a beef with Dan Fielding because their families go back. I was like, Dan Foley is absolutely fantastic. And then the guy who plays the royal is hysterical. So, but that's all. I'm not going to push it too hard after this, no.
All right. Like I said, if I gauge April's interest or whatever she saw of the first Night Court, that could be an option.
Right.
All right. So I think that's it for this week's show, right?
Right. Short show, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, short enough. Right. So, hey, for Todd, this is Joe saying thank you very much for listening to episode 703 of Long Box Heroes. And we'll see you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
You're listening to the soon-to-be-named network, the Lamborghini of podcast networks.
The Rob is a Long Box Hero. The Rob is a Long Box Hero. He gives us five stars.